So what's up, everybody? This is Ruben Garcia, and this is a beautiful day. And today on the Proven by Ruben podcast, we have Brian and Sharon with the Welcome Home team. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure.
You are too sweet. All right, so if you could tell everyone who you are, what you do, how you do it, and all that good jazz.
Oh, just like that,
huh? Yeah. We jump right into it.
Go ahead, Sharon.
What we do is sell real estate.
Okay.
And what were the other questions?
Who you are.
I'm Sharon Hedgepeth, and
I'm Brian O'Connell, and we are the Welcome Home team with Keller Williams Realty.
Woo!
the crowd goes wild.
Yep. Yep. I wish I had those buttons. I can just
side effects. Boom, boom. That would be good.
Right after the tripod.
Yep. Yeah, right. I know. I need to get the tripod. This is actually all new equipment from the very first time I've done this.
Oh, very nice.
So you guys are on the new and improved podcast.
Cool. So yep. If we sound funny, we'll blame it on the mics.
Yeah, post-production is a big thing. I got to get deep on post-production right after this. But yeah, so who you are, what you do, you sell real estate, mm-hmm. and how you do it. Talk to us a little bit about how you got to where you're at. No, screw that. Let's start from the beginning. Where did this all start?
Ooh, are you talking about Sharon and I or the real estate?
Let's start.
I'll tell you, back in 2007, I got a real estate license.
Okay.
I was working primarily a buyer's agent, and I was only working part-time. I was working with another company in town.
Okay.
And I was also on a contract job out of Fort Bragg. Over the years, I built a kind of a following, and I was enjoying selling the real estate, not so much the contract job. When about 2010, I had about enough is enough.
Yeah.
And I went to real estate full time. I just took the plunge. And I think that's what really ignited the real estate career.
Yeah. So not just the contracting gig not being the best thing in the world. What else attracted you to real estate from the beginning where you said, yep, this is going to be the thing?
It was designed. Real estate is my niche. That's, yeah. I was built for real estate. I was built for, I love like the building aspect, the helping people transition to the new chapter of their life.
Not being in an office.
Yeah, I cannot stand being in an office. I'm not one to sit down and read. I like to be out, meet people, and get involved, get my hands dirty. And I like the ability to just work all day, all night. And there was really no punching a clock.
Yeah.
There's no college course that you have to go sit through, 4 years, bachelor degree, maybe a master's or doctorate. This really was tailored to fit me and my lifestyle.
Right. And so I know that you were in real estate for a while before Sharon came on, correct?
Yes, yes.
How many years was that?
Oh, shoot. From 7 to 12? Yeah, till 2012.
5 years?
Yeah, about 5 years.
Okay, all right.
I was selling right about $5 million a year.
Okay.
I was doing about $5 million a year. The of course, there was a big jump from when I went full time. It's funny how motivated you can be to work when you don't have that other income coming in. It's it's like it's sales, in essence. It's a commission basis. So if you're not helping people buy and sell, you're not paying your bills, and your family's looking at you like, hey, where's the food coming from? So that really motivated me to really stay on my game.
Sure.
And to really work. So I was at about $5 million a year, and that was it. I couldn't go any further.
With the average sales price of, so bring some context to that,
$5 million. Probably right around 160,000 as the average sale price. And there was, I couldn't go any further, but it was all I knew.
Yeah.
And everything was rolling right along.
Yeah.
I met Sharon in 2012.
2011.
Stand corrected.
Got married in 2012. Just
agree. Got married in 12. Yes, ma'am. And Sharon was a full-time registered nurse over, 22, 23 years as an RN. She was working post-op and had a really good job. we had, you know, kind of go in early and get off work and be able to be there to get her son from school, right. And had a really good job, but her passion had really always been real estate.
Right.
So when she started dating a realtor, which I think that was one of the things that motivated her, my value proposition to her and why she would want to start dating me is she could have access to the MLS. So she always had a passion for real estate. So it didn't take long when she said, guess what? I'm going to, you know, well, we were busy. Right. And she was really trying to help me out. And one day I just said, you know, either you're going to quit nursing and come work with me full time in real estate, or I'm going to have to hire somebody because I just can't do this, not at this level. So next thing you know, old Jed quit her job, quit nursing, got a real estate license, stopped nursing, and we started working in real estate together.
How hard did that have to be for you to be an RN for 23 years? Did I get that right? 23 years? To do that for 23 years, secure job, and left for a commission gig. Like, how did that feel? What was that transition like?
It was scary. I'd always contemplated it for a long, long time. Yeah. And that was what kept me from going into real estate, was knowing I had a really good job and I was a single mom, and just not knowing. But with Brian already in real estate, it kind of gave me the courage as far as, since he was busy, I felt like at least, you know, at least he knew what he was doing somewhat. So it would help me. And probably for the first year, I just did I was like transaction coordinator kind of thing. He didn't like the paperwork, so I would do the paperwork. And so I learned that part of it. And we would be driving around in the car and I would ask him questions. How do you do this or what do you do? So, and I would just take note. I had a notebook even then and just filled out notes and everything.
Right.
So, and then my job kind of gave me an ultimatum that it was either this many days a week or none at all. So, that kind of pushed me. That kind of pushed me. So I said, okay, this was, you know, that one door is closing and so we just kind of went into it. And at the time, Brian only worked with buyers. He did not want to work with sellers. So if he had a buyer that wanted if he had a buyer that wanted to sell, he would just give it to somebody else in the office.
Yeah.
And so my thing was, just tell me what you don't want to do and I'll do it. So when I came along, I really didn't take anything off of him because he kept doing everything he was doing.
Right.
And then I was just taking stuff that he might have given away to somebody else. So we started off really busy.
Right. And what year was this when both of you guys connected, jumped straight into real estate, and started getting it going?
I was licensed and started like January of 2013.
Okay.
And then, right about then. And, you did catch that she said that I somewhat knew what I was doing.
Kind of.
So there was a time.
Yeah.
There was a time that I actually felt like I knew what I was doing until things got crazy. Well, when Sharon said, well, I'll take on the listing side, benefited her was, how many times did you move in Fayetteville alone or like in Cumberland County between Hope Mills and Fayetteville?
Probably like 13.
13 times. Gosh. And buying and selling real estate. So she had been the customer, the client, and knew exactly what she disliked in the real estate world and working with realtors. So this was her opportunity to say, you know what? I know what they don't like.
Yeah.
So let me go ahead and put together this strategy or this level of service that is going to surpass what she had in the past. So,
and I had built two houses too. So even like going through the whole construction process and knowing, you know, the difference between granite and laminate and knowing some of the difference. So I did have a heads up that way.
Sure.
And people would say, well, you're lucky because Brian's in real estate, so you've got all this knowledge.
And you're like, whatever, I got him.
Yeah, she brought a lot to the table. No doubt. She really did, and having that business sense too. So we put together, you know, with Sharon, taking the photos and with the 35mm camera, the digital camera, and she would go in and stage the home, do some light staging, and everything had to be perfect. And we started giving this level of service that people weren't necessarily used to. It wasn't, it was like, hey, I will snap some photos, throw a sign on the yard. And then, if you try to catch me on my cell, you know, sellers were not really happy with that.
Yeah.
So we put this level of service together.
Right.
And it took off.
Well, it took off. Bring some context to the listeners, how much did it take off? What did your business look like in 2017?
Well,
what did it end with?
In 2017,
we sold 276 units with a total of about $43 million in production.
That's taken off.
From five, and I would say when we left the previous company, we were probably at $6 million.
Yeah.
If we were lucky. And that's when both of us were all day, all night, and it was just not fun. We were working at just trying to keep it together.
Yeah.
And when we came over to Keller Williams, and with the systems they have in place and the coaching, started implementing some things too last year. So it's been a journey. We doubled and doubled.
Yeah. Wow. So we'll go to two things. One, for you, when you were riding around and you were taking notes and you were in that world, right? And knowing that you moved 13 plus times, new builds and all that, do you find that some of the stuff that you did, some of the notes that you took are now stuck in a system within the Welcome Home team because you saw it from a different angle? So you're like, you know, add this piece because I know for sure that sellers and buyers are looking for this because that's the world I lived in.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even if it's, most people that work with sellers know communication's probably the number one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't hear anything, you know, you stress and wonder what happened and how come I didn't get feedback and things like that. So I think part of that and, Brian had worked a lot in new construction before I came along and I was intrigued by foreclosures and he had not worked with foreclosures before. So some of our interests kind of combined together. So we both were learning a lot at the same time.
Why foreclosures? What interests you about foreclosures?
I love the notion that somebody can buy a house and then not necessarily flip it like HGTV, but to start off with equity in it as an investment. Gotcha. So, you know, if you could find a foreclosure and especially a few years ago and just put some paint, carpet and appliances, maybe, you know, stick it on a Lowe's card, 18 months, no interest. And then a couple of years, 3 years, 5 years, you could sell it and make a really good profit, especially with VA loans when you're financing, you know, on top of your loan with a funding fee.
Right.
That was just, I think it all comes from wanting to do the best thing for your client. You know, it's like, how great would that be to know that they've got this investment that, especially when we were going through issues and we still go through issues where sellers are trying to sell their house and they're having to pay money to sell their house. And, you know, with the way the markets gradually started to come back.
Right.
So it's just, I think it was more about kind of like doing the right thing, you know?
But you guys also looked at foreclosures as an opportunity to invest in your own world, correct?
Correct.
So how many of those, so is it buy and hold? Is it flip? What type of invest, all of them? What type of investments are you guys looking at?
Our first one, and actually I don't think any of the ones that we've bought were actually foreclosures because, you know, a lot of people say foreclosures, but it's not just foreclosures. You just look at the opportunity as far as, you know, if you're looking at a house and you see like price per square foot or something like that, it may not be necessarily foreclosure.
Right.
And our first one was kind of...
it was an accidental flip that was... It went horribly wrong. It went the other direction. We bought it for us to live in. And Sharon has an excellent eye for design. And so we had this, just put all this money into the house. It was going to be our home. And then we realized that this wasn't where we needed to live. We moved across the road to what we would consider almost like our compound now because our entire family lives over there.
Yeah.
And so we had this gorgeous house that we went ahead and sold, and we probably took a little bit of a loss on it.
Well, that one wasn't a true investment, right? You guys were going to live there.
We were going to live there. Yeah. That's why we put in stuff we wanted to live with.
Yeah, we would have done it a little bit differently. It would have been an investment. Different. Yeah.
Right.
But the first one was actually... when we did buy the house that we were currently living in, there was a little house next to it. And it almost looked like it was sitting in the yard. You know, it was really close.
Gotcha.
So once we got on the contract, the same people owned it. So it wasn't actually for sale. So we approached them and said, hey, we would like to buy this house also. And if we can't buy this house, we don't want to go through with this house just because it's truly like almost in the yard.
Right.
So you were going to be at the mercy of whoever was living there.
Right.
So we did. We came to an agreement, and our plan at that time was to just, we didn't know what we were going to do. We just knew we wanted to have control over it. And so we thought about using it for family and clients when they come in and need a place to stay for a little bit, or, you know, maybe their house isn't ready yet, so they have a place to stay. And then it turned into, and I'm not even quite sure how it happened, but we had people that needed a place to stay, and it ended up, we turned it into an Airbnb, and that's what it's doing currently. And that's what we did with our second one as well. What we look for is we look for something in our area. You know, we look for something in our neighborhood. We're trying to, you know, when you look at foreclosures, when you see a buyer look at a house or a seller selling a house and there's a foreclosure as next door or two doors down, more than likely the people that live there weren't keeping it up that well anyway.
Right.
So the good thing about it selling as a foreclosure is someone's going to buy it and they're probably going to fix it up. And it's going to improve the neighborhood.
Yep.
So that's another thing. We like being in our area and our neighborhood to help improve, you know, value and the way it looks and just to make it a more community feel. And like Brian said, we've actually got my mom that lives a mile away. My daughter lives a mile away. She's getting ready to buy her second home in the same neighborhood to do the same thing as an investment.
That's awesome.
And how much more do you want from your 30-year-old child is to go ahead and start investing as soon as possible.
And at the same time, lifting the value of the market or the neighborhood.
Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome. So how many homes have you done that within that community, within that neighborhood?
We're on our third one now.
We're working on the third one, and I'm in talks on another one. We'll just see if we can come up to an agreement.
Yeah.
Something we had a class from, I believe it was Bill Middleton one time came and spoke, and I remember him talking about getting one house a year or thinking about for his kids.
Yep.
But even even setting a goal as far as, because we were just randomly doing it, and it just kind of happened to us, but to be more purposeful and think, okay, well, you know, even if we don't do it in a rush, because we're not looking at it as to flip and make a quick buck, you know.
Right.
So if we thought of it as doing something more systematically like that, and, you know, to have a retirement plan or to have something to pass down to the kids and the grandkids or, you know, something like that, and to try to set a model for our kids to do the same thing.
Yep.
If they can start 20 years earlier than we did, you know, what kind of position are they going to be in?
Yep. Agreed. So for anybody who's listening that is looking to get into real estate investing, and you guys have obviously done a little bit of it, what would be the one thing that you tell them to look out for or some advice that you would give to them?
My first thing would be don't tackle on a huge project the first time, because you're going to make mistakes, and, you know, make sure you have resources, you know, whether it's a good contractor or whether you have good subcontractors that you can use yourself, and get a home inspection and calculate, and this is what we do for our investors. We calculate what the net proceeds are going to be when you sell it. So even if you didn't plan on selling it right now, if you plan on doing it as a rental or whatever, go ahead and figure out if you had to sell it, if something, the world came down or whatever, worst case scenario, you couldn't hold on to this and needed to sell it. Could you sell it and break even or make a profit?
Yeah.
You know, so you're not stuck with something that's a money pit.
That's so important. I find that the more successful people are, and I would put you guys in the category of being successful at the moment, right? And in the future and working towards even higher levels of success, they're always looking for an exit strategy first. Like, what could go wrong first? Let's just acknowledge it, maybe even put it in a place, not saying that we're going to stop, but at least we've acknowledged it and we start putting things in a place just in case. I think that's super important. So you just said that you guys doubled your business. And then doubled your business?
We doubled it. We went to like 14 million and then 30 something.
I think the first
million.
Year we were at Keller Williams, we went from like 8 to 16 million.
What do you think caused that?
What caused it?
Yeah.
Leverage, systems, and
models.
Models. I mean, absolutely. Having a, instead of working underneath the umbrella of a company that's just take, to come to a place where there is a foundation to build a business off of, a platform to with no ceiling. There's no overhead. It can go as big and crazy as you want it to go, as well as you, as long as you're willing to work.
Right.
So
and there's a model to follow. You're not
reinventing the wheel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you're not stranded feeling like, you know, what do I do now? You know, there's models and systems. And there's a great network of people that to mastermind with and things like that.
Right.
So.
Right. So what were some of the struggles from going to that point to doubling it to, what'd you say, 16 million?
Yeah.
What were some of the struggles, some of the things that some people may need to look out for?
Well, we went out a model.
Ooh, got creative first.
Yeah. And with we started getting a little going sideways a little bit.
Yeah.
And it was a growth issue. It was just that we were growing, but we didn't have the second step in place. You know, we had the first assistant, and then we took on a buyer's agent, I think was, and we didn't have the second piece in place. So we stepped back, regrouped, and went back in, and we just did some better hiring and just tried to really follow the model. And then the struggle was just the how do you handle this crazy, you know, this fast-paced business, because it's not like there's nothing slow about it.
Right.
It's coming at you full speed.
Yeah.
And how do you tame it and make it go in the direction it's supposed to go and provide five-level customer service and great training for the for your crew? So it was scary.
Yeah.
And I would say needing to hire faster. You know, when you're growing like that, it's very, very scary, especially the first person you hire. And especially if you haven't been a business owner before, to hire that first person and realize that this person depends on you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're providing for their livelihood. So I'm sure we waited way too long. And, you know, I think Brian and I were similar in the fact when we were in real estate, we didn't have goals. We didn't have models or anything like that. We just worked hard, you know, and both of us worked hard and worked like crazy 24/7, didn't take vacations. You know, that was one of our big whys when we first came to Keller Williams, was to be able to take a vacation or to be able to take time off.
Right.
Because it just hadn't happened. And I think if we had started hiring sooner, to get those things in place in anticipation of what it's going to happen, you know.
Right. So what were some of the big nuggets, some of the cornerstones that you guys learned through the $8 to $16 million growth that you've kept in the business? You said that definitely needs to stay there. I'm so glad we learned this from 8 to 16. What are some of those big cornerstones that you're glad that brought you a ton of value that you've kept in the business?
Brian should not be doing paperwork at all.
Never. If you see me trying to crunch numbers on, or put paperwork together and be organized, you need to pull it out of my hands and give it to the. I think that was that. What she's hitting on here is key. When we on our first hire, we screwed that up.
Yeah.
All we know how to do is work really hard.
Right.
And give great service to our clients.
Yeah.
We didn't know how to delegate, to give away, to leverage.
Sure.
Tasks or a portion of the business to somebody and understand, look, they got this. So, with our first hire, it was a struggle because we didn't know how to step out of that and let somebody else take the reins and succeed. So we kind of had a parting there. And then the second hire, they were a little more knowledgeable to help us go ahead and let go to where we could go out and focus more on business.
Yeah.
So that one of the biggest things is like the absolute leverage, step out. Let somebody else take the reins.
So what do you say to someone who's listening to this and they hear you and they say, yep, I'm in that zone of feeling very uncomfortable. I don't want to delegate. I'm the only person that knows how to do this. What do you tell that person?
Oh, I would say that.
Just do it.
Just quit your bitching.
Do it.
Yeah.
That's us every time. I am a huge control freak. And I'm a huge, think I'm a perfectionist, and it's very hard for me to let things go. And even when I do let things go, it's hard for me to not, like, go over, and, you know.
Looking over the shoulder.
Just, check it and things like that. So I think a huge part of that is having the right people in place. When you have the right people in place, you know, even if you have tendencies to do that, you trust them to do that, and also to let you know if they do need, if they need help. You know, a good person, a good talent's going to tell you they need help.
Yeah.
Or ask for help or something like that. But if otherwise they've got it, and you just have to trust them.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we're trying to empower everybody else to feel like this is their business and they have ownership in it. You know, it's not, we don't want to do this forever, and we don't want to be, you know, we want everybody to be able to just, you know, rock it out of the park.
Yeah. No, it's a great thing when you know that those people have buy-in in your business, and that's, you know, just to look at KW, that's how they grew so dang fast, because we all had buy-in on this thing called profit share. And we could just, the more successful KW was, the more successful we knew that we were going to be. And we, so the buy-in thing's huge. So how did you know you had the right person? For the person who's listening and says, well, how do I even know if it's the right person? Because you said hiring's super important.
It is. And not necessarily in hiring, you know, Keller Williams has a great process for hiring, even that isn't always foolproof,
right?
Especially
because you got people involved.
Yes,
right?
You got people. Yeah, and neither Brian nor I have ever been business owners before, and ever been in a position, you know, like that. But I think when you say something and it gets done, you don't have to ask three times, or you're not there and things get done, or you know, you're not there and, or you're on vacation and you don't get blown up 60 million times a day.
We would come into a situation or have a problem or an error, and when somebody can say, okay, let me implement a way to eliminate that from happening again. Right. Or, okay, I hear what you're saying. Now, this is what we can do to put a system in place.
Right.
To help design systems by seeing, you know, taking ownership, saying, you know what, there's a better way to do this.
Yep.
And really working together for a common goal.
Yeah.
Then you know, but we are so, in on team. That's through this, from when Sharon came up with the Welcome Home team and the logo and stuff. It was truly.
Did you draw it?
No.
No, you came up with it?
Just the, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was like, it was like on Fiverr or something. And I was this or this or this or something,
okay.
You know, tweak it. Yeah.
Sorry,
no.
Brian.
Sorry. I don't have creative ability that way.
But
you heard it here.
She made the decision on it. Yes. You know, and she came up with a name, and we really are, really, really, really are a team.
Yeah.
It's all about team.
Yeah.
And at no time will we ever say, oh, we did this or we did that, because we would not be anywhere near, where we are now, if it wasn't for that the whole concept of we are a team.
Yep.
When we first came to Keller Williams, and people were like, what's your big why? What's your big why? And that probably for the first couple of years was very difficult for me to answer, because I honestly didn't feel like I had a big why. You know, we were doing real estate because we liked it. We loved our job. We liked working hard. We liked making people happy. And there wasn't really like an end goal. You know, we weren't doing it for a reason. We were doing it because we liked it.
Right.
And it wasn't until probably within the last year that, you know, and seeing some of this come to fruition, I think the big why for us is our team and seeing everybody else, you know, succeed. And, you know, we always talk about being family, because a lot of my family is on the team.
Right.
And if you're not part of our blood family, you are adopted family now. But we, you know, we make jokes about, you know, somebody on the team will say, you know, Dad's mad, or, you know, just say, because we compare ourselves to parents, and, you know, and anyone as a parent knows, like, when their kids are struggling or when they're going through something good, or they're successful, and how proud you are and how you want, you know, whether it's something you don't want to do, but you know that needs to be done, or whether it's the recognizing for what they're doing. It honestly is almost like the same sensation, where it's, so you just want them to be the best they can be.
there's a lot of gratification in watching a newer agent come in with no experience to capping in a year. And it feels so good. And it's quality of life, really. Even for the people that come in working at administrative, mm-hmm. in a role of admin, to have them really enjoy their work, to see their families going on vacations they wouldn't normally go on, reaping the benefits of the team's success, and their quality of life is better because of something that was, that we developed a few years back.
Yep.
And we know what it's like to be the agent that can't take a vacation because you have to work. So for our agents to be actually able to take, 4 weeks off a year and still, close over 30 deals a year, that's huge to us because we want them to have that balance that we didn't have. We know what it's like to not have the balance.
Right.
And, we don't want them to get burnout. We want them to enjoy their family, and they're able to do that and be productive at the same time.
So would you say that your big why has kind of morphed into watching the people on your team succeed and fund the things that they desire in life?
Definitely.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
It's interesting, right? Because you don't necessarily know that that's your big why until you step into it.
Right. Yeah. So we didn't have a big why other than maybe to take some time off. That was like our big why.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to get my golf game in, shoot in the 80s, and still not there, not even close, but
it's okay. You're getting
it. It's going to happen.
Yeah. So what do you tell the people who join the team and they kind of look at you and they say, I don't know what my big why is either. Do you just say, just grind for a while and eventually it shows up? That's what happened to us? Or what do you tell?
We kind of peel it back I think it's we end up getting an answer for everybody because that's kind of the thing we focus on, like with our coaching too. So whether it's a trip to Disney World or whether it's to go shopping or whether it's whatever it is, mm-hmm. I think one of my biggest hurdles too at the beginning was your big why doesn't have to be this big world peace decision. It can be something for this year. It can be something for this month. It doesn't have to be, it can be, it can evolve. It can be something different. So, I think focusing on that and what they can do now, it could be something as simple as just, being able to not stress about bills every month, and to see some agents that are struggling and wondering if real estate is even for them. And, the happiest thing that we say is like, if you do what we tell you to do, like if you do what we tell you to do, you'll be successful. you'll be successful. Yeah. I promise you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Now, you'll cap within 6 months. Just do what we say and, you know, be here, be present.
Yeah.
And we tell people on our team that, yes, real estate's flexible. Yes, you don't have to be in office, but it's a career. It is a job. Yeah. And especially when you get into real estate, you need to look at it as a job because you're not established and you don't have the knowledge,
Yep.
So you have to put in the time to begin with.
Yeah. I had someone come in one time, and a brand new agent, and they said that they're not going to touch any deal that's under $60,000. And I was like, yeah, we're not going to be a good fit. He's like, why? I just don't want to waste my time with that. I was like, you can't afford not to waste your time with anything right now. You have to focus on everything that comes your way. And I think you're getting a little confused with just that one deal. You understand, like, it's who they know too, right? Like, they have a circle of influence and just their.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And
let me tell you a story about that too.
Yeah.
We have a listing agent who is new and was calling for sale by owners.
Yeah.
And called her for sale by owner. That was probably less than $60,000. Yeah. Called. So she said yes. She wanted to set up a listing appointment with her, and she did. And when she went, she had 13 other properties that needed to be listed. We're still listing and selling her properties today.
And none of them sit on the market. None mm-hmm. of them sit. They're like they're. We price them right. The owner is really happy, and they're
She's a great cheerleader for us. They're good friends, and and we do give that. And even when Brian and I, we had a deal that was probably $20,000 or something. And it was
pro bono.
Yeah, it was. I think we paid to sell the house. But it was, they didn't speak English. The 14-year-old son was translating for them, and you could just see their appreciation and happiness. And those are some of the ones that really stick out to you, for more than just what a commission makes.
Exactly. You know? I think I gave him a refrigerator that I had in like storage or something just to help him out. Yeah.
And that means the world to them. And they would never, ever forget you and who you were and your name and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They won't. You live in their life forever.
Well, those are the things that teach you something too. You know, you're there to help them. Yeah, but those are the things where you get something out of it too. Because you're like, wow, you know, here I was complaining yesterday about, you know, one of my shoes breaking or something. And these people are, you know, are going to make a home and, you know, they're happy and appreciative and
you have to learn. You have to learn how to write offers, learn how to negotiate, learn the systems. Yeah. And what better way than to something on maybe an entry level, somebody that other agents would not give them the opportunity to purchase a home because they had too much going on or wasn't a good fit. But you stepped in, helped their family buy a house. What you've learned with the knowledge of how to write an offer and negotiate, you know, repairs and go to closing and these, this is stuff that if you make a mistake, it'll probably not be as frowned upon with somebody that just appreciates you working with them than somebody that's buying a $250,000 house and you screw something up and then you're really going to be flustered.
Yeah.
And it could not turn out as good. So
would it be fair to say that most of the time, $60,000 deals and less, you learn a lot more in those deals than you do.
Those are the hardest deals ever.
Right. Like
they are the hardest. And it's a struggle.
If something can go wrong, it will.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. These are not brand new homes. Mm-hmm. For $60,000.
No. Uh-uh. You're gonna learn a ton. So and this has nothing to do with real estate, but I think it's interesting, right? That sometimes we need to be reminded on just how well we have it. And sometimes things like that need to happen in our life where we like you said, it teaches us something. We look back and we're like, man, we were just complaining about something so small. Why do you think, this has nothing to do with real estate, why do you think that us as humans end up defaulting back to that? Like we constantly have to be reminded.
Because we're human.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
We're not faultless, and I just think that's just, it's just human nature.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, it's, we're not perfect, so.
Yeah.
And no one is, so it does take, you know, it does take those things to.
I noticed that Sharon and I, we put so much into this, and it's something, it's our livelihood, and we've been in it all the way from the beginning.
Right.
And we don't take enough time. We find ourselves not stepping back and saying, you know what, we really need to kind of embrace the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because look at there's so much going on. And, you know, maybe you just focus back on us. And, you know, we have it really good. We do have it good. And we need to kind of relax and take some time. To just live in the moment instead of like, the funny thing about real estate is when's closing? You can't wait to get 45 days. You can't wait to get 30 days from now. And before you know it, the month is over, the year is over. And it's like, where did all that time go?
And that's true. Yeah. And I think what pushes on that closing date is not just you thinking about closing, the attorney, the lender, the client. Like that's a lot of energy behind closing day.
It is.
Absolutely.
So how much did you guys close in 2017? Which I had a better memory? 200?
276.
276. So what do you, just to bring some context to this question, what do you tell someone who's loving business, been in business for a while, always in the grind, and they don't know how to step back? They don't know how to step back and just see what they have going on and be appreciative. They're kind of stuck in the grind.
I think one of the things that we've talked about with our agents is, you know, with Keller Williams, we do that four conversations model, and having a goal and breaking it down will help you be off more. So
interesting.
And we have an agent on our team. Ruby is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Beast.
She takes a lot of time off, but she crushes her goals every month. And I think part of that is she knows what she has to do. She has a goal and she knows what she has to do to make her goal. She makes her goal and then she's able to be off and to enjoy the time off and not worry about, because in real estate, you know, that there's always that motto, you don't know when the next one's going to come, or, you know, you don't want to slow down, or you don't want to close the door on an opportunity. But I think if you have your goals and you know what they are, it does allow you time to step back, because then you're like, I'm good this month. And I've got, you know, I've got this coming up and this coming up, so I'm good. I can take off a week and I can be comfortable and not feel guilty.
Exactly.
And mindset is a whole different topic, and I'd like to get into that another time. But Ruby's why, and I don't know if we should even be talking about this, it's kind of personal to her. She loves to give back. It's not just about like the traveling and going back to Seattle to visit with family, but any chance she has to give back, like she gave like a half bold collar scholarship and
right.
to go just help with, you know, back in family and friends and give back. I think that's just like shows how genuine somebody is, and people, they see it there. And it's comforting, or it's fun to work with somebody that is not about the dollar. It's about why you're doing it.
Yep.
And just your passion for helping people.
Yep. And she crushes it. She's crushing it. It's interesting to say that, you know, if you look at your goal, number one, and if you crush your goal week three, we have 4 weeks in a month, you're going to feel really good and really confident to take that fourth week off. And how about the 3 weeks that you were crushing it, you were also giving at a high level. So like, could you... I want to live in Ruby's world. I want to know what that feels like. That feels amazing, I bet.
And even the listing agents, you know, they're more like job oriented, where, right. you know, with the lead generation and what they're doing. And because they're so systematic and so organized and planning and being here, you know, they've both closed over 30 deals the first 6 months. And part of that is just being present, you know, being there and, right. and just putting in the effort while you're here, you know. And that's what we said, like, we want to focus on more is working smarter, not harder. You know,
mm-hmm.
we don't care so much about growing this way as just trying to, who we have, getting them to work smarter so we can, you know, make it better for them.
Right. So I think we roll right into it. What are some of the challenges that you guys are facing now that you see, or at least coming on the horizon, that you guys would like to address?
Well, we did 276 last year. If we're staying on track, we're going to 400. We're on track now for 354. I mean, we could hit 400 dealing with that volume.
Yeah.
We're trying to keep that infrastructure in place to support the agents to continue to sell at that level or to work at that level.
We're in Fayetteville, Fort Bragg, so you're going to have people leave. So
right.
anytime you have people leave, and especially with admin staff, and you have to start over, or,
yeah.
you know, that's always a little bump in the road.
Yeah.
So that's, we at the beginning of the year, we had a large spurt of growth. So something that you probably couldn't foresee. So I think for us, it's that trying to balance having enough people in place
yeah.
to keep providing the service that you want to provide. If you ever, and I'm sure every real estate agent has probably had at least one day where they feel like they did not do 100% of what they could have done for their client, or missed something, or, you know, I'm sure there's always that, and we're all harder on ourselves than our clients are. But I think if there's ever a day like that, then it's like, okay, that's, you know, this, I don't like this feeling. We need to make sure that we're doing what we feel like we should be doing.
Right. Right. So you would say that during this growth, it's looking for more talent, because talent leaves, because we're in that market, and talent leaves sometimes.
Yes.
So what does that look like? What are one of the priorities you guys are putting in place to ensure that talent is looking at the Welcome Home team, is wanting to join the Welcome Home team, join the vision, join the growth. What are you guys doing?
The focus is on climate. Our focus now is that we want to be where people want to work.
Right.
People, they see what we do and want to be part of it.
Work hard, play hard.
Work hard, play hard. We want to make sure that we're a playground for growth and ideas. And if you have an idea or want to start something or go somewhere, so come on, important. Let's talk.
Yeah,
let's talk, because if we have the right like-minded people in place, there's just really no telling where it could go, and everybody's enjoying what they're doing. Look, if anybody said that real estate wasn't stressful, they'd be crazy.
Right.
There's so many variables that you can't control with lenders and appraisers and home inspectors, and you have the buyer's agents and the listing agents, and there's just so many fingers in this pie and so many different personalities and different timelines. It gets extremely stressful.
Right.
So to have a family or a group or a team that they're able to lean on each other. And, you know, one day I might come in and have to be there for somebody else because they're dealing with a crisis situation, and vice versa, or right. Vice versa. But you know how I am.
That's ironic.
You know how I throw that back and forth. Yeah. But so yeah, build a climate. A climate. It's going to be stressful, but you know what? At the end of the day, we know what we're doing, and we know the end product, and it's worth it.
Yeah.
So we're continuously looking for people to. Come on board and let's talk. Let's see where your head's at, and let's open up a conversation and see if it's a good fit.
Yep, and you build that culture.
People with big goals and big goals, but wanting a balance. You know, it's big goals, but not having to. I joke. I always tell people, had I known about the team concept before we got into a team, I would have just joined a team.
Oh, that would have been interesting.
And I've always been like, even throughout my nursing career, you know, I could help with charge nurse or supervisor, but I was always the good worker, you know, I was always the one.
Yeah.
And just, you know, I never had a need for, you know, being the leader per se.
Yeah.
But I see, you know, now where I'm at and where I've been, I just see the value in a team to be able to, you know, and the good thing with it for most of the agents, when you talk to them, because when we have new agents come, we'll say, we'll talk to them, ask them why they're on a team, ask them, you know, what is it about it? You know, because one agent may say accountability. If it wasn't for the team, I'd just stay in my pajamas all day.
Yeah.
Somebody may say structure, you know, they like having a structure, but you know, that it's, you know, going in and having the same structure. And somebody else may just say the camaraderie, you know, I don't want to be by myself. I want to, you know, go in and have people to roll things off of and have fun with and, you know, plan things, you know, business building and whatever we do.
Yeah. So work hard, play hard. And one thing I've seen a few people struggle at is I don't know if they take off time, even when leverage is in place for them to do so. What do you tell the agent who is just on your team and just hustling day and night? That's all they do. And do you guys kind of sit back and say that you need to take some time off, or they're like, do you have that conversation with people who just want to live and breathe hustle, hustle, hustle?
We do. We try to, like, whenever they're going on vacation, you know, the way our team's set up is that if somebody needs to see a house or an offer needs to be written, you know, we've got that team there to support them so they don't have to, try to juggle it from 3,000 miles away. And everybody's pretty good about that.
Is it a requirement? So if they say, no, I'll be good. I want to win.
No. It's funny. In Japan, you know, it's mandatory that you go on vacation. They even budget your vacation for you. They'll hold back the money because it's required that you take a vacation.
Right.
And it's kind of, that's the same way with our team. It's like, look, you need to put in place, you know, your time off. And because we're here to support you while you're gone, but you've absolutely got to block that time. Right. You need to set it and say it and know when it's going to happen.
We scold them, you know, if they start getting into it, we got it. Cause we get it. But need this done. Well, we got it. Someone can take care of it. So-and-so showed a house for me. It all ends up working out in the end, because if when you're gone, you're going to need help. When they're gone, they're going to need help. It all works out. We only have one agent in particular that's not good at vacations, and we're working on that as far as getting that planned for them so they can enjoy some time off.
Is it because they just like the work, or?
I don't know. I think it's just, Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. I just think there's just been no plans to do anything, and
it's a new transition too. So the idea of stepping out and take some time. It's like they're concerned that the momentum won't be there, but that we work with them to maintain momentum so that they can take it. You're always going to have a dip, but it won't be that bad.
Yeah,
you won't feel the ripple. It'll be instead of a wave or a roller coaster.
Sure.
It's just a little hitch in the giddy up. Yeah. That's it.
And you guys bring an interesting perspective because you know what it takes to get to your place, meaning work like hell from nothing to 6 million, right? And one of your big whys when you got here was like, I just want to escape. So, you know, see, it's interesting. You both got, you see it from both perspectives, and I can see that you're able to deliver what they need to hear in that moment, depending on whoever it is.
Extreme ownership. That's huge.
We took a vacation this year. It was for like 5 or 6 days. We went to Mexico. And when we got back, few people
you're
on the team.
Right
going like... back. Dos margarita por favor.
He's got that down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we didn't hear from anyone. And, you know, we would check in. They're like, we got it. And it wasn't until we got back that, you know, we were like, okay, well, this person cried twice while you were gone. And this person, whatever. But we handled it. We didn't call you. And, and they were very proud, as they should be. They were very proud for, you know, for doing that. And that's kind of like really how the whole team is. It's like everybody supports each other so much. I mean, I know it sounds corny, but I think, you know, we're together every day. So, you know, everyone's very supportive. And it's like, we got this. You go. We got it.
Exactly. And how important is it for you guys to truly let go, to show them that you are willing to push it over to them, and that you're willing to allow them to problem solve? Because how many people are listening to this and they say, well, when I go on vacation, I constantly have to look back and see what's going on, and look back and who can call this person. And on some level, are they the part of the problem, right? Because if they didn't, and I don't know what their business looks like, but if they didn't constantly put their fingers in it, maybe the people that they've hired, the talent that they've hired, can handle it, and you can show them that they can handle it. You can show them that they have ownership.
That's 100% true, because I did that. You know, I would do that, and I would say, what about, I got it. What about, it's already been done. You know, and it's
so, already doing it on the other side.
Yeah, no, that the other person was like I would say, what about this?
Oh, okay.
I would get back into it and say, what about this? We already took care of it.
Yeah.
Well, what about, it's already been done. And it's, you know, even when you have talent there, it's something that you just have to work on yourself, as far as the letting go, and it is being taken care of. And I think once you get into the talent of, you know, that everybody else has the same mindset as you do, as far as the way you take care of things and the way you want things to be perceived, I think that's a huge win.
Yeah. Do you guys have a system where they have to kind of be dragged through some type of gauntlet to kind of earn their spot on the team, so you know you have that trust with that person?
No, I think we do, like, the 90-day thing.
30, 60, 90.
I think it's, and during that 90 days, usually before, you pretty much know. And I think, you know, like, even especially with admin, we've had some turnover of admin. And, you know, we even try to scare people. You know, this is very stressful.
Right.
It is, you know, it's, I don't think anyone, I bought and sold 13 houses before I got into real estate, and had no clue how stressful it was, and all the things that can go wrong in a real estate transaction. So I think, and when you're that fast paced and having to juggle and, you know, multitask and things like that, it's, you know, even when people say I learn quickly, or I'm really good with details, or I multitask and I've arranged all this, it's still, it takes someone quite extraordinary to tackle those feats.
Yeah.
You know, and then with agents, you can see it. And we've seen people that were very smart. We've seen people that were, you know, knew all the right answers and that kind of thing. and maybe weren't so good, but there's so many different things in real estate you can do. So just because this is what you set out to do, that I'm going to be the, you know, the best buyer agent ever, maybe that's, maybe that one doesn't fit you as well as something else will.
Yeah.
But most people getting into real estate don't know all about all the different things they can do, you know?
Right.
So.
Well, I think on some level that's important that you scare the crap out of them at first, because I've once heard that all arguments come from the wrong expectations or something like that. So you're just throwing the expectation out there, right?
Yeah.
We always get probably a week or two into it. They're like, "What the? Now we see what you meant. Yeah, I had no idea that it was going to be this, you know, this crazy." So they do.
What part of 276 homes did you not understand?
Yep.
What do you think?
Almost a home a day in a year. That's
what I tell anyone that gets into real estate, whether they're agent or admin, I tell them, if you don't want to go home and cry and want to quit real estate within your first 30, 60, 90 days, at least a few times, then you haven't done real estate enough. Because I just say that to say that it's normal. Like, it's normal to quit. There's so much to learn that you don't learn in school. So if you feel, you know, like someone's, "Oh my gosh, I feel so stupid." That's okay. We all felt that way. We all did. We were all fumbling through it. We all felt insecure. We all felt like.
And I'm not done. There's still days I'm like, "Jiminy crickets. I had no idea."
Yeah.
And, it's very humbling. Yeah. Very, very humbling.
Yeah.
I got a story on that too for another time.
Why? You can't do that.
For another time.
We need those two beers. Let's go back to Mexico to get them. Yeah, crack them open.
Yeah.
So we can hear that story. But going back, so you said, you know, if you haven't cried in the first 30 days or 90 days, you're not doing real estate. Brian, did you shed a tear your first 90 days?
I'm a military guy.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years.
Well, and he also started out from scratch where it wasn't like getting into something full stream ahead. Yep. You know?
There was a difference there. There was a difference. So the work ethic was always been there. Because even though I was, you know, it was contract work, it was still in the military environment. I've had resort back to some different trainings.
Yeah.
So I wasn't afraid to work hard. It was just not knowing what I'm doing. But I was also fumbling through with selling that first manufactured home for, it was like $100,000, and learning that. I remember closing my second deal and you just so focused on, that's all I had to do. That was it. So it was a little easier.
Mm.
So to build momentum, and then now I can work with four or five at a time.
Right.
And then for somebody like, when Sharon got into it, and I was like, "Oh, cool. Look, here's a stack of files. All of these are going to closing." So now she's trying to learn a new language, real estate contract, mm-hmm. real estate lingo, how to function with appraisers and home inspectors, and how to set expectations and to manage people and to manage this group. It's such a high volume.
Yep.
And, you know, five or six, that's a lot for somebody that doesn't really have a full grasp of the language yet.
Yep.
Yeah, it is, it'll have you very nervous that, am I doing the right thing?
Yeah.
And this is the problem some of our agents have, is we sit down for coaching and they're like, "Brian, I got so much going on." I was like, "Remember what Sharon told you? You're going to feel like you're lost in the sauce. And this is why. Right now, you've got, you know, 3, 4, 5 transactions going, and you're working with this many buyers, and you haven't had that much time in the business. Go ask the people that you went to real estate school with how many people they're working with." They're like, "Well, they're not. You know, they're still learning." I was like, "Exactly. This is the thing is, your average real estate agent's going to have one or two, and they're going to be able to put all their focus into these one or two. Well, you know, you've got like two under contract and you've got three that you're getting ready to, and you're working with these people. So you went from zero to boom, seasoned agent within 45 to 60 days. So it's definitely going to be, you're learning it. You're drinking from a fire hydrant instead of like from a garden hose.
Yeah.
So, it's to be expected.
Yeah. I never thought about it that way.
I remember Lindsay, our first listing agent, when we were sitting down for our coaching, and that's the other thing is coaching is key. Get into this business and you want to excel, you've got to have somebody on the outside looking in, helping you get where you want to go. We sat down and she was, which just wasn't really on her game. And I was like, well, how many listings do you have right now? Let's take a look. I said, oh, you've got 13 listings. And she was what, like under 2 years, what, probably a year in the business. She had 13 listings. And I says, all right, let's go open up the MLS. Go find what you would consider a seasoned veteran agent and see what they've got. So we pulled a couple up and it was like, you know, five, six, whatever. I was like, that's a seasoned agent. And you, 1 year, you've got 13 listings. So that was kind of like an aha moment. It was like, you know what? Yeah, I guess this really does make sense. And I understand why. And that was kind of her number too, because that's when she started getting offers on homes, is when her inventory was right around that 13. So she likes to run between 13 and 20 now to just keep that turnover.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it kind of goes back to when you said you're still learning things, right? You said you're always still learning things. And I'm still learning. Like, I'm going to pull that out for the next agent or someone who feels overwhelmed and how long they've been in the business and how much they're doing. Because I've never really, I don't know, I've never decided to put both that perspective together of, all right, now go find that rock star. Let's see what they look like on the MLS. Now look what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, could you imagine? I mean, how do you feel? Like, and I bet she walked away feeling pretty dang good, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was, you really saw Pep. Like I said, she wasn't really on her game. But when we were done, she had just that bounce in her step. It was like, you know, I got this. Got this. And it's the confidence really rolled into mindset. And she is just, she is an amazing listing agent. She's got that mindset. She's just, just loves helping people.
Yeah. What do you guys have coming up next? What are you guys thinking about next for the Welcome Home team?
We've got, we are so focused right now on getting our infrastructure, our getting that up and running. We took two steps forward and we got knocked back down a step. So we need to focus. We're focused right now on getting, just reinforcing the infrastructure.
Sure.
So we can all step back and look into the future and to where, whatever we just want, we want to be sustainable. We want to be sustainable. We want something that's going to continue to grow and is always going to be there to provide quality of life for the entire team, administrative, agents. We always want, you know, just one thing to be like, yes, we're, you know, we look at this big crazy monster that we've built and then it just crashes. We just want to make sure that what we're doing is going to for the long haul.
Right.
So once we can get this infrastructure straight, get our solid platform for the agents to grow, then we can kind of step back and say, what do we take on next? Do we get into REOs or taking a new construction division? One of the things that Sharon and I, one of our team is, we are very, very strict on, is nobody does more than one thing. If you're going to be a listing agent, that's all you do. But I have a friend that wants to buy a house. Sorry, you're not a buyer's agent. You will not be able to help them.
Right.
And if it's not, if you can't see the concept, if you can't buy into it, then we're not a good fit.
Right.
So in order for us to take on another department or another, portion of real estate, we would have to have a dedicated member for that. If we were to go into new construction, it's going to be, they're going to have their own department. It's going to be, you're going to have a sales agent, you're going to have a marketing team and an administrative assistant. If we could do commercial, it'd be the same thing.
Are you somebody that's already an expert. Raise their hands for that next division, whatever that looks like.
When every year we do our team building and our
business planning.
And we get the whiteboard or the paper up and we break down the org chart and people come in and put their names where they want to be. So that's their chance.
Do you have one bubble and many names in one bubble sometimes?
We do.
Sometimes we look at each other. We're like, did you see where they put their name? Who the fuck? We just step back and we're like, oh, you'd never thought that they would actually want to do that.
Yeah.
Were they crazy? But hey, let's get them there.
Is one of the whole CEO or one of the bubble CEO run the team, run the business?
Director of operations,
Past that.
Yeah, past that.
CEO.
Yeah, I think I think in all of that it needs a lot of education on our part, just because every step we do is new for us,
And, you know, when we even first started the team with our first buyer agent, we were like, look, you're like the first kid. It's practice.
We don't know
what we're doing. We might change the rules as we go along because we have no idea what we're doing. So you're just going to have to wing it with us. And, you know, they laughed. So, okay.
We were lucky too because they're a good winger.
Yeah. Anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately it's good to see those different positions, but I think trying to find the best equation for the team, the right amount of people, the right amount of talent, not necessarily bigger, just what's going to be a good number to where everybody can have a good quality of life and be where they want to be. So, you know, if this person wants to be here, then we make room to have them here and then have someone, you know, in their place. So to where it really doesn't limit anyone on the team. But
I think with the culture you guys are building, I think organically it's going to grow big. Because the more talent you bring on, the more business is going to be done, the more talent you're going to attract.
I think we've seen that more in the past year. And I think another thing, too, for the agents is the value with the admin staff behind them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you have that support for knowing that, you know, this part of it's taken care of and you can go on and, you know, produce and do what you do and let them do what they do. I think that's huge, too. So I think as that gets stronger and stronger, that's a huge help. You know, we've got more help for listing agents, trying to get more baseline support for them so they can go on more appointments and, you know, go on more listings.
Yeah. I want to see the org chart.
I'm telling you, the CEO is going to be up there this year.
How do you guys move to the next level if you guys are going to continue to be co-CEOs, right? You got to allow someone to see that vision. And then I wonder how many names are going to be in that circle.
Yeah, that's
you know, and I think too for us, as far as with our team that's grown, everything that we've done has been more out of necessity than we didn't start off saying we want a team, and we didn't start off saying we want a team of this many people, and we've never said that. We've just done it because, hey, we need help, or hey, we need someone here, or we need someone here. So it's probably all been a little bit too slow. So
Too slow hiring.
I think because even with you know, I remember when with our first buyer agent, I was having trouble seeing the value proposition in a team and a buyer agent.
Mm.
So, you know, my fear was, what if we don't have enough support? And what if we don't have, you know, what if we don't provide the value to them for them to see it in the team? And now I think we do a really good job at that. And I think that's one reason why, you know, with our agents that we've kept the ones, you know, that have stayed here and lived here because they do see the value and they know that they're very appreciated, you know, by us, and they're a key part of it. I mean, if it wasn't for everybody on our team, you know, where would we be? So I think finding that, and it may change this year, it may be one thing and next year it may be something else, but we haven't done a lot of, you know, let's expand and do this and do this. It's more like, what does our family need, you know, our nucleus here? And if this person wants to grow and do this, okay, then how does that look? Let's make that happen.
Right.
And so we have done some job changes within the team to try to set people on the path for doing something else than what they're doing now.
Yeah. I mean, and as you guys focus on deep instead of wide, you're building a strong foundation for when someone does raise their hand and say, you know, I wonder what it would look like if I became the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be a stronger foundation for that.
Oh, I'm ready to make that move into retirement. You know, really. But I'm ready to spend a lot more time with Sharon in the mountains, at the beach, traveling.
That's why we live in such a cool little place, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can touch mountains, and we can touch the beach, and we can touch big city, and we can touch small town.
Love me some Fayetteville.
Yep.
I'm a retired Navy guy, so we travel. Navy travels, boy. I tell you, we're all over the place. I've been to so many different countries and parts of the world, and I've seen a lot. And when this little town of Fayetteville here, I had the opportunity to leave, and I said, no, I'm staying.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been anywhere that had this kind of access to anything you want.
Yep.
And it took me a while to acclimate to the humidity and the heat, but now I'm all in. I'm a Carolina guy all the way, but love Fayetteville.
Yep.
So I could not imagine working in a different market, you know, being close to my military brethren and just everything that this place has to offer.
One of the coolest things I've pulled out of this podcast was I've had a listener send me a text message and say, I had no idea there were this many great entrepreneurs in Fayetteville. I'm like, yeah, you just got to open your ears and talk to people and just kind of get out there a little bit. But they're out there. I mean, we got a solid little town, man.
This place is full of opportunity.
Yep.
It's for the taking. It really is. And it was like 2007. I was reading in the paper that somebody wanted to come in and invest billions into Fayetteville and to growing the downtown. And they were shunned. And the good old boys were like, we don't need that. We don't need that in our little town of Fayetteville. And I was appalled. I was like, they're talking about growing. And it was like a mindset shift in our city, in our community. It's like, let's grow.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go. Let's see where we can go. Let's open up opportunity to these people. Come in and start businesses and see where we can go and look where it's gone.
Yep.
And I'm so excited to watch our town and where it's going to go.
Yep.
It's just going to help everybody.
Yep. And it's not just, you know, I guess the mindset is if we grow big, it's going to be like this big city thing.
Mm.
I've seen more like down home, good old small businesses being grown or being started now than I feel like I've ever seen before. And they're holding on to that old tradition. Come down, let's sit, let's talk. It's not that big city thing that I think a lot of people, maybe the mindset is thinking that it's going to be just this hustle bustle big city thing. And if it grows to that size, great. But I think a lot of people are holding on to that good hometown feeling. And I think we have a strong presence in that as well.
I agree.
I think Fayetteville would always be like that because I know for me, like I came here from military. And when you think about the population that we have that is military, when people come here, they usually don't have family here. You know,
right.
You're moving here. So your family ends up becoming your friends.
Right.
And everybody, I think it's a lot. I think that's what that community feel with Fayetteville is about, is because, you know, if you do have your family and that's your nucleus,
right,
you don't get to meet as many people and depend on people. But when you're here and you're, you know, single or young family or, you know, kids and things like that, and you have husbands deploying and fiancés and wives, and you have to depend on your neighbor and you have to depend on your friends. And I think because of the military alone, I think we're always going to have that neighborly feeling. You know, because that's, you have to, I guarantee you, this is one of those towns where people have friends that are closer than family in a lot of cases.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
How many, this is the first place I've heard of Friendsgiving, like Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But they got their friends over.
Yeah.
Because it's just, that is their family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I never thought about it that way. Mm-hmm. That's true. All right. I'm going to pepper some questions at you guys real quick. Cool?
Cool.
Do it. Share and answer them all.
All right. This goes back and forth to both of you. What do you believe separates excellent from average?
Mindset.
Great. Period.
Motivation.
Mindset and motivation. You guys got to write a book, and the title has to be Mindset and Motivation. I guarantee it's sale. All right. Nope, you guys answered that. What have you gotten better to saying no to?
That's tough.
I think, you know, in real estate, especially when you first start out, you say yes to everything.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing because you need the experience and things like that. I think recognizing if it's not going to be a win-win, then it needs to be a no.
I agree. I agree. It's so hard to turn away business. But if it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit. And you're just going to try to force that square peg into a round hole, and both parties are going to be unhappy. So saying no to business, people, you know, that's very, very difficult. But if it needs to be done, it needs to be done.
Yep. Yeah, because sometimes the energy is an investment too, right?
Sure is.
And going back, I guess I've never... So a lot of people have said, you know, we'll have someone come in and they say they want to do this for some reason. However, it's really, they just want to sell something. And that could be outside advertisement or something for some of the other business owners that I've talked to. And I guess I never really thought about it. The only way that it could be a yes, if it becomes a win-win. And I guess I've never thought about it like that. But mm-hmm. I mean, I completely understand where you have to say no to a lot of people because you have to stay focused on something else. But if it becomes a win-win for both of us, it gets a little bit easier to say yes. And I guess in a transaction, if it's a win-win for both of us, it gets a little bit easier to say yes as well.
Yeah. And I had a hard time. I was talking to somebody about opportunity with the team, and they would have been, I would have loved to have them with us.
Yeah.
But they would have been settling to come on board because the position that was available wasn't exactly what their long-term goal was. Right. Or I'm going to say long-term, it was like 3 years they were looking to do something else. And I was like, well, this position for somebody that sees a future here, that they're going to be with us all the way. We're going the distance.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, it's a tough pill to swallow. But in order for them, for them to be happy, I had to miss out.
Does the team know that?
I believe so. I believe that everybody understands that they're here for the long haul.
Yeah.
This isn't a quick fix. This is we're all going to the same place, and we're all excited to get there.
Yeah.
Let's think big and keep going. Let's go.
Yeah, because I think it's cool if some of the people on the team knew that person that you're talking about and know that
I know what you're saying. No, that's the unanimous.
Yeah. Because I mean, for say if I were on your team,
anonymous.
It's one
wrong word.
Unanimous.
A or B.
Pick one.
Unanimous would be all.
Yeah,
and then anonymous.
Dude, I screwed anonymous. Up all the time, and had a teacher for a mom. Could you imagine? It was all the time, and now Trisha gets me all the time, but. Dang, where was I going to go with that?
If all the people on the team
were... knew the person and knew that they were a rock star, however, knew that they were only using it for like this temporary ride and knew that you decided it wasn't a good fit for me, if I were on the team, I'd be like, oh, that's what I'm talking. I'd feel more proud to be on the team because we all are in it for the long haul. And we even basically said this person isn't a good fit, although they're a rock star, but they're not in for the long haul.
Yeah. And I see that. Yeah. I believe wholeheartedly that the agents within our team, they understand where we're at and their value they bring. Yeah. And that, it was not on accident or out of need that they were there, that it's a fit.
Right.
That they truly fit. And, when we're all in there together, we click. I mean, everybody has their day. Like I said, you know, sure. It's sometimes we're the disgruntled family.
Yeah.
But I believe that everybody understands that they're there because they belong there.
Man, it's cool to hear the story because I believe you guys have really built like a solid cultural team, and all it's going to do is attract more culture and more talent to this. And knowing little stories like that the decision to not allow someone on the team because they're not in the long term going to be a culture fit. It's going to be cool to see you guys in the next 5 years. Do you imagine?
Let's get through the week.
Yeah. Well, we need a CEO bubble for the next 5 years. That's for sure. All right. Let's see. Well, I feel like I know your answer. What profession other than your own would be fun to attempt?
Coaching.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Good. Coaching? I would have said golf. We'll do coaching.
Oh, I'm too rough on myself to take that game serious.
Coaching, why?
If those, I don't know. I like what Sharon was saying earlier to the big why. It's watching them grow. Just watching somebody cap first year in the business cap. And it's like, do you even understand what that means?
Yeah.
That is cray cray. Yeah. You just don't even get it.
Yeah.
Go tell somebody else who sold that many houses that you were in real estate school. They'd be like, what?
Yep.
Yeah. So, watching people grow, I think that would just be a lot of fun. I just have a commitment issue. But yeah, I think that would be awesome with just being able to help, just get touch so many people and be able to help them, go to the next level or set goals and obtain their goals and smash them.
I think you're already doing that.
Well, we do. Sharon helps me a lot with the number side, and we do weekly coaching with the agents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it's not amazing when you have to break it down and be like, well, the reason you're not hitting your goal is because you're not doing what needs to be done, and telling yeah. them having the difficult conversation with them. It's not always fun.
Yeah.
But on the other side, when they listen and they're hitting their goals and they're achieving things they didn't think they were capable of.
Yeah.
It's just so rewarding.
Yeah. So coaching within the team or even coaching outside the team, like where it's your sole gig, people call you and say, hey, what does this look like?
That is the culture that we live in.
True.
That's the Kool-Aid we're drinking. Mm-hmm. And that's the people that, you know, they just, hey, just a quick question for you. How do you do this? And what, you know, how did you do that? It's like, great. Yep. And Sharon, I see there's like no time that she'll just like not stop what she's doing and say, well, here, sit down.
Yeah.
This is what I did. And now let me see what you got going on there. No, you know, this is how I did this or how I did that. And she'll stop and she'll take the time, or, you know, we'll be in passing in the hallway and say, hey, you got a minute? Then we'll just stop and we'll always give them, you know, just there to answer any questions or give mm-hmm. them any advice. And, you know, there's the other day we had our bold talk with our bold panel. And one of the agents up there, I knew her when she was with a different firm, and to see where she's at now. And it's just like, I'm there's like such a huge cheerleader for her.
Yeah.
And I'm just, and I know her story and what has happened to her in her life and where she's at now. And it's just, it's amazing. And yeah. That's all KW culture.
Yep. And I'll contest to that, because we were helping grow in a different team. And I went to Sharon and I was like, what the heck? Yeah, I don't know if you were busy at the time, but I know Sharon was there. And I was like, Sharon, help me out with this. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what's going on. And she was like, what? Here, you do this. Here, grab it. I'm going to send you some files. I'm going to send you some Excel spreadsheets. Like, she had it down. And it wasn't even a question of or even the mindset of scarcity of like, no, you're going to take everything from me. It was like, no, let me give it all away. Let me share everything. So I could attest to that for sure.
I remember one of our, when we were starting the team, and we went to Raleigh for a conference on building a team.
Yeah.
And she'd mentioned, the facilitator would mention that, she would just tell these agents, this is how I do this and this is how I do that. And then someone else said, hey, aren't you worried they're going to go take everything you told them and use that? No, because they're not me.
Yeah.
They can go take all my systems and whatever they want, but they're not me.
Yeah.
So am I threatened? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Look, we all know that there is no special pill we take in the morning that just says, now you're killing it at this level.
Yeah.
Everybody has the exact same opportunity.
Yeah.
It's what you do with it. So we made a decision to be where we're at, and we're going to continue to grow.
Yep. And most won't even implement what you've told them, right?
I want to be just like you. Careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
You can. So people say, I want to be just like you. Okay. Be in the office at 8:45. Oh, no. No, I don't get out of yoga pants until 10:30.
Yep.
You know, so it's what you put into it.
Yep. How about you, Sharon? What profession would you... Well, let me just go back. What profession other than your own would be fun to attempt?
Lawyer.
A lawyer. What type of lawyer?
Prosecuting.
I could see that.
Why? Why prosecuting attorney?
I think I would be good. I like to gather evidence, and I like to research, and I like to prove my point.
Have you looked into schools?
No, I don't want to do it
no?
that bad.
No, okay. All right.
I don't do it that bad.
Yeah.
But I just think it would be interesting. That or even our nurse anesthetist, I think that would be just, I would have, had I known about it when I was younger, I might have gone on to school to do something like that. But
yeah,
but yeah, it's always been intriguing to me with the law and knowing the law and that kind of thing. But so.
Yeah. Do you see, I mean, since we're kind of tied into it, being on the real estate commission at all?
I don't know. I've thought of that before. And, you know, even like with a nursing background, we have a huge legal aspect of nursing too, with charting and the way you know. So when I came into real estate, you know, even you know, seeing a blank makes me break it up into hives, or a bunch of lines through something. So that comes from my nursing background, but yeah, I would I've always been interested in that, and even like the rules and stuff. You know, it's right. I'm always the one to go, why do we have that rule? That doesn't make any sense. Mm. Or, you know, to question things. So that would be very interesting to me to do. Interesting for me to do.
Do you have any lawyer clients, like real estate clients?
We have, but not necessarily any that I've really, like, talked about, like, their business with or something like that.
It might be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we even have, you know, friends, acquaintances that are in the business.
Sure.
And it seems like we talk about other things than, you know, they don't ask us about real estate. Yeah, we don't ask them about, you know, like, what's it like to be a lawyer?
That makes sense.
So,
yeah. Yeah. And that's usually the time that you don't want to necessarily discuss anything about business. You just want to let go.
Other great conversation.
Ah, true. Dang. True. All right. What is a mistake you're seeing newbies do in the industry?
They know it.
They just know it from the beginning.
They know it.
Yeah.
They know it. It's like not trying to fake it through instead mm-hmm. of gather the information and do it right.
How about you, Sharon?
I think my biggest thing is putting the time in, you know, being present, you know, even if, you know, and what even as a team, you know, even if you're, for instance, sitting in a bullpen in any office,
right?
If you're sitting there doing some things on the computer that you could be doing at home, but if you were doing it in the bullpen, what might you overhear, or what might happen, or what might be going on that you can pick up and use for the future, and you know, tag along with somebody or. You know, or whatever, but, and just getting into the mindset of this is my job. I'm going to go and I'm going to be there, and do that if it's possible. Obviously some people have other jobs. Some people are having to do it part time, but, you know, I've seen some agents that just do it part time and come in the evening that are rocking it out too. So I think it's just making that commitment. It doesn't come easy. You know, we see that a lot as a team, mm-hmm. you know, looking for leads and things like that. And that's one of the big questions that all agents ask.
That's what I was going to say. I think they're asking the wrong questions. Mm-hmm. If I had to revamp or, you know, answer, mm-hmm. they're asking the wrong questions because they're asking, what are you going to give me? Are you going to give me leads? Mm-hmm. I'm going to choose this company because they're going to give me leads. I can get on Zillow calls or whatever.
Yeah. Or what sources use to buy, or what sources in its, you know, and it's just because they just don't know a lot of times what the right questions are to ask. I mean, they're just, you know, they're asking anything anyone would ask. So I think it's just getting, and whether it's a $20,000 deal or whether it's, you know, shadowing somebody or being present you know, the classes are great, but being able to get out, one of our biggest things with training with buyer's agents is actually one-on-one with Brian, going out on appointments, you know, and that's how I learned. I learned by watching him go over work with real estate agents, with other clients, and mm-hmm. we're going over buyer agency agreement with clients and breaking it down into what does this paragraph mean and what does this mean. And so when you do have questions, you know it, you know, you understand what that means, and you can tell them what it means.
Right.
So just kind of, there's, and I think part of it too with new agents is there's so much information to know. It's almost like, where do you start? It's almost like, you know, it's mind boggling as far as working with buyers and sellers and, you know, transactions and mm-hmm. contracts. And there's just so much to know. So biting off just a little bit at a time. So.
Yep. Agreed. And you can almost roll that into any industry that you really want to be a part of, or you know, that you really want to have a big presence in. You just show up, you follow, you copy,
mm-hmm.
you know, you write everything down and you study and you go back to it and you wake up early and you do it all over again. And
it's just showing up and being present. That'd be my other thing. Take notes.
Yeah.
Take notes.
Well, I think that's just respectful too. Like if Could you imagine, one, I have a terrible memory, and I know focus, what you focus on expands. I should not be focusing on that. But I write down everything, and even if you're, especially if someone's showing me something, I want them to see that I am, like, engaged. And you do that through note taking.
When I was a new agent, I actually had a 3-ring binder. And the reason I did was because if I took notes about something and I'd already taken notes on it, I could put the notes together. You know, that was before Google Docs and Google Sheets and things like that. Yeah. So I kept everything on paper. But first of all, Brian's not the most patient person.
Stop.
When he's busy, you know, so I would, if I wrote down how to do a listing cart,
right.
And I was like, so we can't do the full display, but you're not supposed to check full display on this part. And it was just, so I was like, just take notes and don't ask them again.
Right.
So I think, for anyone that's teaching, especially if you're teaching multiple people, you know, by the time you say the same thing the third time, you know, you're just like, write it down. You're not, and we'll tell people, you need to write this down because there's no way you're going to remember this. Unless you have a photographic memory that should be in the Guinness Book of World Records, you need to take notes.
Sharon was explaining something to one of the agents, and she said, oh, I'm going to have to ask you that again. She's like, oh, no, you won't. You better write that down because I will not be going over that again.
Yep. There's your sign. Write it down. All right, what about some of the veterans? What do you see in the mistake that they're making? People who've been in the business for a while.
Thinking they know it all?
Thinking they know it all. Yeah. I'll tell you. And
I don't mean to say they, because, we see things that where we make mistakes. You know, one of our biggest things each week is looking at failing forward and things that we've done wrong or things that we should now implement. We've got so many different policy changes and checklists because of all the things that we've done wrong or didn't do good enough. So I think it's, not necessarily even thinking they know everything. It's just knowing that it's always going to be evolving and always a learning experience. And I think, even with the leadership possibilities and training and learning new stuff and just being open to always learning.
The agent I am now to where I was 5 years ago, I like me a whole lot better now than when I look back at the arrogant, pompous knucklehead that I used to be. You know, it was, setting the record in the office and thinking I know it all and I got this whooped and look at me and, I'm a great agent and I'm selling it and I'm outselling these guys and whatever else. To now, when you crash and burn because your business is growing and you realize you don't know everything and you really got a lot to learn, and especially the business side, which I'm fortunate Sharon is, she's a lot better with learning the business and reaching out to mastermind with people to find better ways to grow. So crashing and burning is so humbling when you really think you know something, and guess what, buddy, you don't know nothing.
Yeah,
because you're selling real estate at a level that you're not ready to do, and it's humbling. So really, I don't even look at stature or where you're at in the market. It's because I have so much to learn.
Yeah,
and I'm showing that every single day.
Yeah, they feel as if they know it all because they're used to the old school of real estate and not really looking forward to it evolving. And it's evolving.
It is. Our market is amazing.
What's the biggest difference you've seen? So if you did rewind 5 years ago to now, what's the biggest evolution that you've seen in real estate?
Our
inventory.
The inventory is
for the actual market.
It's great. It's great. We're sliding out of such a strong buyer's market.
Agreed.
To where, look, one thing that, coming from a military background, is I don't handle entitled and people that feel like they're entitled to,
yeah,
well, you owe me this, you owe me that. Nobody owes you anything.
Yeah.
It's like we're in a real estate transaction here. We're just trying to make sure that it's win-win, that both parties are being treated fairly.
Yeah.
And for people to say, well, if you don't do this, this, and this, I'm walking. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It was, at what point did you wake up this morning and feel like somebody owed you something?
Yeah.
We're all adults here. And we're making this huge financial commitment. Let's go into it with our eyes open and know that we have to bear some responsibility in this. So back, you know, years ago, you could roll like that. You'd be like, my buyer said, if you don't tighten up those outlets, they're going to walk. Yeah. And the seller's like, dang, yeah, all right, let me go tighten, yeah, those up, because I don't know when my next deal is going to come.
That's right.
To now, it's like, look, we'll take care of this, this, and this, and the negotiations are better because, mm-hmm, you know, we're not going to drop the price on that, and we're, mm-hmm, we're going to pay all your closing costs. Mm-hmm. And we're able to give a voice to the sellers now,
yeah,
and it's so nice that it, because I love that our buyers are getting a great value. You know, they're buying a house at market value, and that the market is growing, and they're going to be able to sell it down the road. They're, yep, making an investment,
right,
now.
Right.
They're not buying a house that is going to stagnate market. That's, yep, going to, it's just going to sit there. Mm-hmm. They're getting into a great opportunity to build on their future.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, but it's balanced now.
Yeah.
It's win-win now.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not.
It's benefiting sellers and buyers both now.
Yeah, agreed.
And there is a lot of learning for a lot of agents that have been in this town for a long time that,
yep,
that don't work with a lot of sellers, that they've, yep, they've got a lot of learning to do.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool because you start seeing the pros start to lift up, right? Because now negotiations are a little bit more heated than they've ever been. I mean, like you said, a buyer's agent could just walk in and be like, closing costs, home warranty, this price, thank you. You know, and then basically they got it. That was negotiations. And now it goes, you see multiple offer negotiate or multiple offers now. And so you start to see the pros start to kind of really poke their head up out of the rest of this crowd of agents we have.
I had a guy call me today. And he's like, hey, I'm just trying to find out what happened to that offer that I sent over the weekend. I was like, did you call to make sure the house was still available before you sent it? He's like, no, it just came on the market Thursday. I was like, okay, it already has two offers on it. It's under contract.
Yeah.
And like, huh? Like, you're missing the bus.
Evolution.
And really, are you helping out your client? Because, right, if your client really wanted that house, they, yeah, didn't get it. They didn't get an opportunity because you're like, tomorrow. Surely it just hit the market. It probably got 3-4 days before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right. Purchases of less than $100 that have most improved your life. Brian, we'll start with you.
Purchases less than $100.
That has most improved your
most
life.
Most improved my life. Too many crickets. Are you kidding me? I don't even know how to answer that. I don't buy stuff. I don't buy stuff like maybe a planner or something. I don't buy stuff. Food and that's it.
I love it.
It's a tough
one.
Well,
I'm glad it shook you up a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't read, so
yeah.
I could say like
contracts, you know,
the,
are those?
The one thing or Crushing It by Gary V.
Yeah.
But yeah. I go to Sharon. Yeah. She's
Sharon. You're next.
So I have two actually. Hey. My first one's kind of funny because we gave our stove to a buyer that needed a gas stove. We didn't know till the last minute it was gas for closing, so they had to get a stove right away. So we told them go get the stove out of our house, and they kept it.
We were in Michigan, and I wasn't going to go to closing, so I called my plumber and said, "Go to my house, take my stove, and go put it in this house."
So we still don't have a stove because I never
since
got
May.
Another one.
Oh my gosh.
So when Amazon Prime Day happened, I ordered an egg cooker.
She did.
And it is so neat. It is not expensive. And it can boil 6 eggs. And they are boiled perfectly. You don't have to worry about overcooking them where they're like brown or green. Or undercooking them where the yolk's runny. And you can do omelets with them. And
so how does that improve your business?
Improves my life.
Life.
Improves your life.
Improves my life.
The whole life.
And the other thing, improves my business, I think, was buying a second monitor. I would see people using two monitors and just think that was a little dweeby,
yeah,
a little geeky.
Well, that's a day trader.
I didn't really get it. Yeah. I was like, okay, that's neat, you know, because we even had an agent that was on our team for a while that had two, and I never quite got it. But when we hired some admin, they were like, is there any way that we could get, like, an extra monitor? So we went to Best Buy and we got some.
That evening we went
$89 monitors and put them in, and oh my gosh, they're life changing.
The
they are life changing.
Yeah.
Yes. For
like what?
You know.
What is, yeah.
Well, for like for a listing agent, if you could have the MLS on one screen and you could have, right. you know, your CRM or your information or notes or whatever on another, or for admin, if you're going down the checklist, you can have, you know, the main stuff there and while you're working. So you always has that as a reference.
Right.
We do like a Google sheet with all our contract to close so they can kind of keep that on there to look at as they're doing other things. So yeah, now I'm wondering if everyone should have three instead of two.
You're going to be that person.
That was just, yeah, I had to go and I was like, oh, we're getting monitors for everybody now. So we have a list. We're going to go get some more adapters for people's computers so we can go get some more monitors for people.
Dude, that's awesome.
If you're calling leads, you know, if you're cold calling or something like that, have that. And while you're talking to them, you don't have to lose their name. You can have the information.
And another thing that, you know, that you're always learning. That's something I'm going to just throw in my tool belt for if I'm coaching a team or something. I was like, well, listen, have you ever thought about getting your admin two monitors? And they're like, whoa, this guy's a genius. Mm-hmm. It's the
brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. And I could take that now. So that's
pretty
cool.
We've had Danielle for how many years and she's done that. And now she's like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. I'm like, I know. That's great. Thank you, Amber, for that suggestion. Yeah.
Since I peppered you guys with questions, what question do you have for me?
You didn't tell us we're going to be able to ask you questions.
I didn't tell you guys to be on video.
How long are you going to let that beard go before you start to reel it back in? Is there like a length
when the baby comes?
So I'm gonna answer both.
No, that was my guess of when you're gonna shave it.
No, but there's a story to that too, though. So the last podcast person asked me that, and that hits this Wednesday, so people don't even know the answer yet, right? but no, I've dedicated 1 year. So No Shave November started it.
Uh-huh. So there's that. That was
yep.
fun.
Yep. 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 Right. Yeah. We were going. And so
Amanda's tolerated a lot better than
I did. My gosh. She's a saint. Like, I miss your face so bad. Like she'll go in for a kiss and I'm close to my lips. She's like, God, I just attack her with it. So I would go to November. That would be 1 year. However, Santa will be rocking a beard in December. And I don't know if I can let him show me up. So after December, January 1, 2019.
Well, if that's the case, you might as well go ahead and get it dyed so you can, like, play Santa. Because then you're going to shave it off anyway.
No. So
I might get silver. You know, it's not gray. It's the new in silver
I've
color.
I've gotten this one white. And I mean white.
Easy, but like, come on.
Dude. The wife was like, do you think they got, like, beard color stuff? I was like, probably. They do. I'm embracing this thing. I want another one to pop out. But no, I was talking to Melissa McKinney. She's a photographer here, a rock star photographer here.
Very good.
I said, what would it look like if we could capture what Santa looked like before he was Santa? Like kind of rough around the edges. I don't know, still working in the Santa shop, like sharpening wood. Like I want pictures with that.
That would be good.
Yeah, so still darker beard. Mm-hmm. But Santa before he was
like Chris Kringle.
Before he leveraged out the toy making to the elves. Exactly.
See, leveraged all over the place. See, guys, you wouldn't even have Christmas if it wasn't for leverage.
Absolutely. Think about that. Learn from the best.
That's true.
But yeah, I'm going to cut my beard for the baby January 1. So I'm going to drop the towel. Beard's going to be gone. We're going to get that. Maybe it might shock the baby a little bit.
You're gonna start crying.
Yeah.
Like, who is this guy?
I've seen videos. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that. They just stop. One baby just put down their head, aww, like destroyed. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I could do that.
That wouldn't be good.
I don't know if I could do that.
What's Ruben going to be doing 12 months from now?
This changes so quick. In 2 months, I'm not sure where exactly.
I can relate.
Yeah. 12? I see me not even coaching anymore. Well, not coaching agents. So maybe in a position where I'm helping build something that coaches agents. So either coaching coaches or helping build a system that coaches that coaches agents.
So like,
business people.
Like separated by one. So you would influence others.
Right.
Got it.
Because it's funny when you're put into a system that's not necessarily a system yet and you start building a system to it, you start building a model of how this thing looks, you start getting efficient with it. And in some ways you start to it just starts to become mundane and so you want a different challenge. So it's okay. So now what's the next thing I can build? So in 12 months, I'm sure I was talking to Mark Ramsey and I said, are you on a cycle? He's like, what are you talking about? You know, that's weird. That's a weird question. I was like, well, not women. Are you, you know? I was like, you know, do you see it about every year, every few years that you kind of want to shift and you want to attack something differently? He said, yep. He said a year and a half. I'm on a year and a half or 3 year cycle or something like that. And I said, that's crazy. I feel like I'm on a year to a year and a half cycle where I'll do something. It ends up being in a pretty good place where it could be self-sustainable or someone else can run it. And then I want to destroy something else and rebuild it, you know?
So that's very entrepreneur of you and, you know, loving to, you know, evolve and to create. Mm-hmm. And that those creative juice. I am that guy that likes the same old, same old. I like mm-hmm. to be comfortable. You know, I don't like a lot of change. Right. Coming to Keller Williams, Sharon drugged me kicking and screaming. And I'm pretty sure that when I got here, there was people within the company that were like, he can go back. You know, you can send him back, Sharon. Well, you will keep, but that guy, no, yeah. No. With his complaining and whining and fussing, yeah, he can go. But, you know, I don't like change.
Yeah.
So, that scares the bejesus out of me trying to, hey, I'm going to stop this. I'm very successful at this. I'm just going to stop and I'm going to go build something else.
Yep.
It's like, ooh.
It was, I mean, January, February, there was no paycheck coming in. Mm-mm. March. And then this dummy, I tell everyone we're 90 days out. And so now I'm going to coach agents knowing that a check will not show up in 90 days. I didn't even think about that. This guy. So that was... It was tough, man. It was tough. But okay. I think it builds that pressure, like you were saying, where you don't have that coming in mm-hmm. and you have to make it or this whole thing. And then found out my wife's pregnant at the same time. Like,
how'd that happen? I know. And then, and there's another conversation we can have down the road that, you know, this view is like, well, you need to save up a lot of money so I can make a plunge into, what would happen if you didn't have the closings mm-hmm. in line to pay the bills. Someone said, well, then get stuck going to get one of those jobs I don't like. I said, wow, I would work harder. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go back to what I don't like.
Yep.
I would knuckle down and say, hold my beer, watch this. I'm getting ready to rock this. Yep. And that's basically what I did. I was not going back to contract work. I was going to have a career in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
There was no not. And knowing where I was and where I wanted to be, I knew I didn't want to go back to contracting. So I would rather go ahead and pull 20 hours on a lead gen and getting out and talking to every single person. I'm pre-Zillow. I'm a pre-Zillow real estate agent. So getting agents to go out and talk to people, they're like, wait, they don't call me? I thought, can't I just like, you know, like throw a couple bucks somewhere and someone's going to call me and say they want to buy a house?
Yeah.
No, I'm pre-Zillow. So the whole thing with like, well, the phones aren't ringing. I don't get it. Yeah. So that's what you don't have the closings coming up. Guess what? Double down.
Yep.
Double down.
You never felt focus like you feel focus when your back's against the wall. Mm-mm. I mean, whatever your activity is that you're doing in that moment gets 100,000% of your focus.
Absolutely.
And it's empowering. Especially you know that you could change the whole dang world with that type of focus. All right. So what last question. What question do you guys have for the listeners?
What question do we have for the listeners?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they come join Welcome Home Team?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Who do you know that wants to buy or sell real estate?
And why don't you join the Welcome Home Team?
Yeah.
I love it. Well,
we're
thanks.
Fun.
Heck yeah.
Last year for team building, we went and played paintball.
We did go. We played paintball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we went to we went and had breakfast and had good conversations, and then we went and played paintball.
I remember them coming in and showing their paintball.
Poor April. Yeah. Poor April. She's like, I'll go draw fire. And she had like these big welts on her neck.
Why? Yeah. Who chose paintball?
Me.
It was Sharon. Yeah.
I just never done it before and thought it would be fun. So it was fun. Just make sure April didn't have a scarf on. We went in the cold weather, so usually they're not that. Usually they're not that aggressive. We've done escape room and some other things.
Yeah, because you might have pushed.
Yeah,
you might have pushed people away.
Don't scare anyone. Yeah, yeah.
I'm getting shot at? No way.
Yeah. Cool. We let the people that were scared kind of stay behind and just be on the backside.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you guys coming through. I'm sure a lot of people got value out of this. If you guys, that are ones that are listening and watching, make sure you subscribe so you are the first ones to know when these things come out. And again, guys, I appreciate you guys stopping by.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Yeah, we were like, who would want to listen to us for 45 minutes? We're going on like almost 2 hours. And hopefully people will still listen. Yeah. And we are, anybody listening, we are... available if anybody wants to just give us a call.
Right. So where do they reach out to you at?
Just give us a call, 910-495-5752. That's my personal number. If you want to throw some ideas at me or consider growing a team or just want a little more insight on how did you double and where did you fail so I don't have to. Mm. We welcome the opportunity to mastermind, sit down over a cup of coffee and see where we could help somebody grow their business.
It's important to surround yourself with people like that. Thanks.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it, y'all.
Thank you, Ruben.
You got it.